I should care enough to be honest, even if it makes me uncomfortable. I should, of course, still consider the best way to deliver the message. There is a right time and a right way for every conversation. If someone's mom just died, that is not the day to be accurate, but I was honor-bound to find a way to have that conversation. Effective leaders almost never need to yell. The leader will have created an environment where disappointing him causes his people to be disappointed in themselves. Guilt and affection are far more powerful motivators than fear. The great coaches of team sports are almost always people who simply need to say, in a quiet voice, "That wasn't our best, now was it?" And his players melt. They love this man, know he loves them, and will work tirelessly not to disappoint him. People are drawn to this kind of leader, as I was drawn all those years ago to Harry Howell, the grocer. A leader who screams at his employees or belittles them will not attract and retain great talent over the long term. At the FBI, I spoke often about LeBron James. Even though I don't know the man personally, I talked about him for two reasons. First, I believe he is the best basketball player in the world today. Second, he is never satisfied he is good enough. I've read that he spends every offseason working on some part of his game to improve it. At first glance, that seems crazy. He's already better than everybody else. But it makes complete sense when you consider his perspective. He isn't measuring himself against the other players. He's measuring himself against himself. The best leaders don't care much about benchmarking, comparing their organization to others. They know theirs is not good enough, and constantly push to get better. Early in my term as director, when I had declared that the FBI's leadership culture needed to improve, someone handed me a survey showing we had the second-best leadership survey results among the 17 agencies in the United States intelligence community. I returned the survey, explaining that I didn't care. I wasn't measuring us against them. I was measuring us against us, and we weren't nearly good enough. The tough and kind leader loves her people enough to know they can always improve their game. She lights a fire in them to always get better. I knew there were other areas where we could improve, and I suggested to the entire workforce that they read Martin Luther King Jr.'s letter from Birmingham jail, one of the most important things I ever read. Inspired in part by theologian Reinhold Niebuhr, King's letter is about seeking justice in a deeply flawed world. I have reread it several times since first encountering it in college. Because I knew that the FBI's interaction with the civil rights movement, and Dr. King in particular, was a dark chapter in the Bureau's history, I wanted to do something more. I ordered the creation of a curriculum at the FBI's Quantico Training Academy. I wanted all agent and analyst trainees to learn the history of the FBI's interaction with King, how the legitimate counterintelligence mission against communist infiltration of our government had morphed into an unchecked, vicious campaign of harassment and extralegal attack on the civil rights leader and others. I wanted them to remember that well-meaning people lost their way. I wanted them to know that the FBI sent King a letter blackmailing him and suggesting he commit suicide. I wanted them to stare at that history, visit the inspiring King Memorial in Washington, D.C., with its long arcs of stone bearing King's words, and reflect on the FBI's values and our responsibility to always do better. The FBI Training Division created a curriculum that does just that. All FBI trainees study that painful history and complete the course by visiting the memorial. There, they choose one of Dr. King's quotations from the wall. Maybe, "Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere." Or, "The ultimate measure of a man is not where he stands in moments of comfort and convenience, but where he stands at times of challenge and controversy." And then write an essay about the intersection of that quotation and the FBI's values. The course doesn't tell the trainees what to think. It only tells them they must think about history and institutional values. Last I checked, the course remains one of the highest-rated portions of their many weeks at Quantico. To drive the message home, I obtained a copy of the October 1963 memo from J. Edgar Hoover to Attorney General Robert F. Kennedy, seeking permission to conduct electronic surveillance of Dr. King. At the bottom of the single-page memo, which is only five sentences long and without meaningful facts, Kennedy's signature grants that authority. without limit as to time and place. I put the memo under the glass on the corner of the desk where every morning I reviewed applications by the FBI and the Department of Justice to conduct national security electronic surveillance in the United States. As Hoover did, I was required to personally sign an application. The difference was that our applications went to a court and were often thicker than my arm. As I would explain to employees, it is a pain in the neck to get permission to conduct that kind of surveillance, and it should be. I kept the Hoover memo there not to make a critical statement about Hoover or Kennedy, but to make a statement about the value of oversight and constraint. I have no doubt that Hoover and Kennedy thought they were doing the right thing. What they lacked was meaningful testing of their assumptions. There was nothing to check them. It is painful to stare openly at ourselves, but it is the only way to change the future. The FBI rank and file reacted very positively to this and other initiatives, something I could see in their annual anonymous rating of me across the organization. But I knew some FBI alumni were confused as to why I seemed to be attacking the organization I led. But transparency is almost always the best course. Getting problems, pain, hopes, and doubts out on the table so we can talk honestly about them and work to improve is the best way to lead. By acknowledging our issues, we have the best chance of resolving them in a healthy way. Buried pain never gets better with age. And by remembering and being open and truthful about our mistakes, we reduce the chance we will repeat them. Harry Truman once said, "The only thing new in the world is the history you don't know." Humans tend to do the same dumb things and the same evil things again and again because we forget. Chapter 9. The Washington Listen. Let me not seek as much to be understood as to understand. Peace Prayer of St. Francis. Eric Garner, Tamir Rice, Walter Scott, Freddie Gray. Those are the names of some of the black civilians who died during encounters with the police in 2014 and 2015. Those encounters were captured on video, and those videos went viral, igniting communities that have been soaked in the flammable liquid of discrimination and mistreatment. And although it didn't involve video of the shooting, one death in particular rocked the country. On August 9, 2014, a young black man named Michael Brown was shot and killed by a white police officer in Ferguson, Missouri, touching off weeks of unrest in that community and bringing unprecedented attention in America to the use of deadly force by police